540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Debt limit negotiators have left the Capitol. They did not have a negotiation, but rather a candid discussion after reconvening following an hours-long pause earlier today. Republican Representative Patrick McHenry says he is not confident they can reach an agreement this weekend. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
Speaker McCarthy is still insisting the government can't spend any more money than it did last year. And the White House is unlikely to go for that. And members of both parties are urging their leaders not to give too much, so the situation is still in major flux.
NFL Hall of Famer Jim Brown has died. He died in his sleep at his home in Los Angeles. He was 87. CBS's Christopher Cruz looks back at Brown's long and tumultuous life.
Brown left football in 1966 at the height of his career to become a movie actor, appearing in more than 30 films. He also fought for the rights of black Americans in the 1960s and 70s. The Pro Football Hall of Fame's Rich DeRocher says Brown was charismatic and unstoppable.
Even among other Hall of Famers, there was just something very dynamic and magnetic about Jim Brown that other Hall of Famers appreciated.
This year, the NFL renamed its rushing title after Brown, prompting criticism of the league for honoring a man who had been often and credibly accused of violence against women. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
President Biden has approved plans to train Ukrainian pilots on U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
We've really focused on providing Ukraine with the systems, weapon, and training that it needs to be able to conduct effective offensive operations this spring and summer.
His comments come as the G7 is underway, and Sullivan adds that the members also will come out with a statement on a shared approach to China. A federal judge rules that an Air National Guardsman will remain in jail while awaiting trial for allegedly leaking highly classified military documents. CBS's Bradley Blackburn.
Internal Air National Guard memos filed in court say Texera was reprimanded twice by superiors for taking notes on classified information or viewing intelligence not related to his job. The filing says months later, he was again seen looking at information that was, quote, not related to his primary duty and was related to the intelligence field.
This is an ongoing investigation, not just by the Department of Justice, but the Air Force has also launched their own internal investigation.
That's Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh.
At the cross.
A funeral for Jordan Neely, who died when a fellow New York City subway passenger held him in a chokehold. During the eulogy, the Reverend Al Sharpton said Neely suffered from mental illness. Marine Corps veteran Daniel Perry has been charged with manslaughter. Janvis is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Smoke from wildfires in Canada prompting Wisconsin's DNR to issue an air quality advisory until later tonight. The concentration of particulate matter will increase sharply at times before diminishing as cleaner air moves in. The air quality index is expected to reach the unhealthy level for sensitive groups. That includes people with heart or lung disease, older adults, and children. Wisconsin keeps working. The latest unemployment numbers show the total number of unemployed people dropped by 3,700 over the month of April. The labor force participation rate increased slightly to 64.8%. Nationwide in April, the U.S. unemployment rate was 3.4%, with a labor force participation rate of 62.6%. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area.
Celebrate Wisconsin Day in Chicago this Wednesday the 17th, presented by Visit Milwaukee at Union Station, featuring a beer garden, food beverages, and entertainment from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. Check out the Spring Sustainable Food Series on Thursday the 18th, presented by Urban Ecology Center at Riverside Park. It's free and runs from 6 until 8 p.m. See the contenders at the Sharon Lynn Wilson Center in Brookfield on Friday the 19th. Call 262-781-9520 for tickets. On Saturday the 20th, enjoy the Armed Forces Day celebration at the Harley-Davidson Museum from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. And finally, enjoy Caribbean food and tropical drinks and music at Afro-Sosh Brunch this Sunday the 21st from 1 until 5 p.m. That's at North Water Street in Milwaukee.
If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Follow Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
At TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there's a story in New York that caught my attention. At first blush, angering, that you saw the migrants coming from Florida and Texas being bussed in, and that someone in New York made a decision to throw veterans out into the cold so that you could take these undocumented illegals and swap them out. And that was the story. The story was these illegals are coming and they're being moved in here and we're kicking our veterans to the street. Turns out, not even close to reality. Evidently, someone went to a homeless shelter, recruited some people between the ages of 40 and 60 and said, hey, you want to make $100 for a couple hours for a photo op? Yeah, that's what happened. And my problem with this is we keep using our veterans and we keep using that issue as a political football. We keep kicking them and without talking about solving real problems. And here to share some thoughts on this and the whole agenda. I've asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come share some thoughts with us. Rich is the host of Ojeda Live. He does a daily hit on YouTube and on social media. You can take a look at that. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm thank you. I always love being on your show, Rick, but I also got to make an announcement here. We just founded the Turn Left Pack, and we're going to help candidates, and we're really going to help candidates. We're going to do a lot more than what most of these organizations do. So that's my goal. It's called Turn Left, and we're excited about it. I got some amazing people that were on my 2018 congressional campaign that are with me with this. So I feel very comfortable that we're going to do some great things for some great candidates. When you're talking about the veteran stuff, you know, it amazes me how the Republicans will literally knock down an old lady to get a picture with a veteran coming off of an aircraft with a weapon in his hand from just now leaving a combat zone, because they use us. They use us as props. They use us as photo ops. But down, you know, when it gets down to the real nitty gritty, they don't like us. They don't care about us. I mean, right now we're talking about the potential of us going in default. And one of the reasons is because the Republicans want to cut veterans' services by 22%. So don't tell me that you care about veterans. Don't tell me, they do not care about us at all. They actually, I think that they don't care for us at all. They hate the fact that so many people support the veterans. And it's like they have to do all the things that they do and say to try to act as if they're supportive. But the truth is they're not. And it's easy to see that they're not, because you can look at the legislation that they push that tries to kill things like veterans' health care.
No, I mean, I look at this, and you said the Republican plan cut, what, 22, 23% from the VA. If you remember, the Republican study committee, their number was 49% cut. So, you know, even it gets even worse. Just the other day, I'm talking about burn pits. You know, we got a legislation passed to help people who are struggling because of cancers that they are diagnosed with because of these burn pits. They're talking about slashing enormous funding from that. And you go, I don't know how you go onto the military bases. You're what are people saying there? Do soldiers get it? I mean, are they seeing this or are they shielded from it?
Well, sadly, there's a lot of soldiers that don't pay attention to politics, but they really need to. Also, usually in a unit, in a military unit, technically, it's frowned upon to talk politics with your troops. But I will tell you that, I mean, it's time for people to start waking up and realizing these people don't care for us. You know, like you said, they want to. I will tell you right now, if they cut the Veterans Administration capabilities by 22%, it's already taking veterans 6 months to a year to be able to get an appointment. If it's dental, good Lord. I mean, I recently had to have a root canal, and I literally was living off of Tylenol for months before I finally was able to go to an actual dentist and get something done. And it took me months to be able to do that. And I will tell you, I was in pain every single day. But it will only get worse if they cut the veteran services by 22%. And let me tell you something. You're not going to stop veteran suicide if you take away our capabilities with our healthcare, because a lot of the people that are committing suicide are having issues with the services, and it gets to the point where they end up taking their lives. And I'm going to tell you, if you've ever walked around needing a root canal and you don't get nothing, no help for months at a time, I'm going to tell you, it can be pretty, pretty rough. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of negative things that go through a person's mind when they're in pain.
Yeah.
And sometimes you feel like, you know, I served my country. Why is it so hard for me to get the care that I need?
But, you know, I've been told, you know, this is where, you know, my conservative friends and listeners are happy to tell me that Donald Trump changed all that. You're supposed to be able to go into the private sector and get whatever you need. Because you served the country for 24 years. You fought the battles. We put you up on that pedestal. We told you if something bad happens, we've got your back. I thought we fixed all this.
Well, I'm going to tell you that, no, it's absolute garbage. And right now, the Republicans are going after the health care. So if Donald Trump did anything for the veterans, which I don't think that he really did anything for the veterans, but if he did, the Republicans in the House want to kill it. You know, and I say this, if you're going to send me away and break me in combat, then please fix me when I come home. And that should be the priority for every veteran coming home. And make no mistake about it. You know, this whole thing, you know, we was in war for 20 years. We're still at war. We're still in Syria. We still got troops in Iraq. You know, I'm going to tell you that everybody comes home with something. I don't care where you are at. If you have to deal with mortars and rockets, I'm going to tell you, they will be very unsettling to you. I remember the first time a rocket landed close to me. And I'm telling you, I literally almost soiled my pants. And I felt it in my chest because it was kind of close. And that rocket made a hole about 10 feet deep in the ground. You know, I've had two mortars land within 5 feet of me. And thank God both of them were duds. You know, if they wasn't duds, I would have been killed both times. It's sad when you realize what this does to our veterans. And then when we come home, it's really sad when the people that are supposed to be taking care of us, the people that vote, that say yes, you know, when Congress says yes, we're going to go ahead and approve us moving forward and invading a country, you would think that they would do everything in their power to help us when they come back. But the Republicans are showing us that they really don't care about us. When it comes to fiscal spending, being fiscally responsible, they think that the way to do it is to cut our capabilities.
Now, look, you know, there's one of these things where you go, you know, okay, if we're broke, I got it. You got to make cuts where you can. But the reality is, we're making a choice to cut from veterans' programs, to cut from food programs for hungry children, to cut from home, you know, housing assistance for families. We're choosing to cut those things, but tax breaks for billionaires, making sure that Elon Musk's has got his, you know, $180 billion. We're going to protect that because that's sacrosanct. There just seems to be screwed up priorities, I think.
Well, you know, the thing is, and that's why what you do is so important, what I do is so important, because our job is to educate people. You know, we've got to let these people know the horrors that these Republicans are trying to, you know, throw on us. I had a guy that come here yesterday. He was one of the guys that was over top of the painters, and he come here yesterday to finish a couple touch-up jobs. And we started talking, and in the beginning, he was literally like, Trump's pretty good. DeSantis is pretty sharp. And it took me literally 5 minutes for him to go, wow, because he did not understand. He did not know what these people are really about. Donald Trump didn't make America great again. Donald Trump made America hate again. And you know, the only reason why Donald Trump is even running for the presidency is because he knows that he needs those 4 years where he no longer has to worry about being put in courts. And with that 4 years, what he's going to try to do is he's going to try to establish a dictatorship, because that's the only way that he gets out of this. That's the only way that he gets out of this. And I'm going to tell you, you know, my mission and your mission, we got to educate people. We got to wake people up. And that's exactly what I try to do every single day.
You listen to The Rick Smith Show here with Rich Ojeda. He's host of Ojeda Live. You can find that nightly on Facebook and on YouTube. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. And the new pack, right? You got the turn left pack. How can we find out more information about that?
Well, we're going to start putting some stuff up. I've got a couple things going. I did a couple commercials already. But, you know, basically what I want to do, you know, I ran for Congress. When I ran for Congress in 2018, I was number one out of all 435 congressional races in flipping red votes blue. And my team was absolutely phenomenal. The Turn Left Pack is actually my old campaign manager, my finance guy, one of my fundraisers is on here, and myself. And, you know, we are absolutely hitting the ground running, and we're already getting people looking out and following us. And we've even gotten a couple donations. So I'm pretty pleased about that. And like I said, my goal is we want to find candidates out there, and I want to do more for them. Right. I want to be able to help them with digital marketing. I want to help them with raising funds. I want to help them to be able to utilize their volunteer properly with phone calls and door knocking. There's so many things that I believe we can absolutely help campaigns with. And that's what I want to do. I want to be able to go there. I want to be able to help these people. I want to help the guy that's going against Ted Cruz. I want to help the woman that's going against George Santos, you know, and I really don't think she's going to run against George Santos. I think the Republicans are going to defeat him because there's nobody going to vote for him ever again. But I want to get her name out there now so everybody gets to know who she is, so that whatever happens with the primary election, everybody's going to know her name a long, long before the primary even comes.
Good stuff, and I look forward to seeing what you do with this. But you know, 2024 is going to be, you know, as you've said, an interesting election cycle. The presidential race shaping up, at least on the Republican side, to be a repeat of 2016. I think I was counting today. There are like 15, 16 people who are either in or close to being in or being pushed in. So we're going to go back to this moment of having a main debate and maybe a kids table and all kinds of stuff. And the thing that I see is I think this benefits Trump.
Here's the thing, though. Tim Scott from South Carolina has just thrown his hat in the ring.
Right.
Tim Scott's going to get votes. He's going to get votes. If all of them are running in the primary, they're all going to be taking votes away from Donald Trump. Now, regardless, if Donald Trump wins the nomination, you know, it's hopefully people are waking up, and hopefully Donald Trump, there's enough people out there that know how dangerous he is in that position. But it's like this. Let's say he gets beat. If he gets beat, every Trump supporter is going to absolutely be against whoever beat their orange Lord and Savior. There's 30% of the Republican Party that will vote for Donald Trump no matter what.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it. if DeSantis dethrones their orange Lord and Savior, they will not vote. They will choose to sit the election out. DeSantis, if he doesn't get that 30% that follows Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is the kind of guy that will say, I will not support DeSantis. He is the kind of guy that will absolutely rocket attack his own party if he don't get to be the winner. So that will hurt them. And as the way I look at it is, if 30% say they're sitting it out, then Joe Biden is going to win big time. And honestly, you know, in his first 2 years, besides the fact that he has been the jobs president, Joe Biden has done great things. He has reduced the deficit by $1.4 trillion. Imagine what he can do if we give him 8 years. And that's the thing. We have not seen the budget balanced since Clinton. And you know what? I believe that Joe Biden is somebody who actually could get things done. And I support him. And the Democratic Party is already supporting him. As far as anybody's concerned, they're already saying it's going to be Biden and Harris. And that's the way it needs to be. Let's build up the funds. Let's support the candidates. And then let's win big, because I believe that Joe Biden absolutely can beat these people.
Yeah, I see. I look at Trump with, you said 30%, and I think that's an accurate number. I think about 30% of the Republican voters are solidly in the red hat brigade. But I see it a little differently. I don't see DeSantis being able to beat that, especially if you've got 100 other choices. And this is where Trump will thrive in this chaotic situation. I think having a crowded field is exactly what Trump wanted. And it's going to benefit him, especially with the changes that they made to the primary system.
And that's basically news. That's music to my ears, because the truth is, if it's Biden and Trump, Trump's done. Trump will not be. There's enough Republicans out there that know that Donald Trump is done. But DeSantis is the one that's the scary one, because DeSantis is smart. Donald Trump is not smart. DeSantis is smart, but DeSantis is also evil. You know, he just signed a bill in the hours of darkness where no Democrats were around, but the NRA was there. And it basically says anybody in Florida who wants to carry a gun concealed can carry a gun concealed. So get ready to watch. You know, Florida become Texas, because Texas is having school shootings and shootings all the time now because Abbott did the same thing. So I'm going to tell you that right there screwed DeSantis. DeSantis, what he did with immigrants in Florida, has completely shut down the fruits and vegetable industry. He has shut down the construction industry there in Florida. And make no mistake about it, the people are seeing that, you know, and what he's doing with trans. He just signed a bill that said that transgender kids can be taken from their parents if they're going through the, you know, getting the puberty blockers and things like that. Let me tell you something. I tell people, leave. Don't give DeSantis a penny of your money. Leave. Pack up and leave. If you've got a child that's transgender, pack up and leave. Do not let that friggin' guy be able to get away with what he's doing. To me, he is the friggin' next Hitler. And I'm telling you, he is that way. He's that guy.
Well, that's a good place to end on, do you think Trump will go there? Do you think Trump will, I guess that's, do you think Trump will follow your lead on that?
Follow my lead on what?
DeSantis is the next Hitler. Do you think that's?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, Donald Trump, no, Tim Scott can't beat Donald Trump.
No.
First, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, hell, the Republican Party's about as racist as it gets. You know, they would never vote for Tim Scott. But I'm going to tell you that DeSantis is the scary one.
All right.
But DeSantis has really stepped on it, you know, in multiple ways. What he did with the immigrants, what he's doing with transgender. Hell, I mean, he just lost $1 billion investment from Disney World. Yeah. Disney World is ready to pack up and leave Florida. What DeSantis has done is DeSantis is destroying the state of Florida. And here, Fort Lauderdale is underwater, and DeSantis is out running around selling his book. You know, he's no different than Josh Hawley. You know, Josh Hawley doing a book about manhood. Mr. Daggone running around like a daggone chicken with his head cut off, scared of people. Don't try to act like you're tough. Goodness gracious. My daughter would stomp him like a narc at a bike rally. My daughter weighs 102 pounds. She'd climb him like a tree and swell his eyes up so fast his head would spin.
That's why we love you, Rich.
I speak the truth.
Oh, Jet Alive every weeknight. I'll make sure you check it out. Rich, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
8:30 to 9. I see you, my brother.
Thank you so much, our good friend Rich Ojeda. Make sure you check that out. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, Ted Cruz makes me laugh. Evidently, Ted wants to investigate Bud Light now. Yeah, evidently, Bud Light, according to him, and this is a stretch. You kind of got to give him credit for, you know, feeding the daily outrage machine. On a certain level, I don't think he's smart enough to have thought this one up himself. This has got to be something that was manufactured for him. But evidently, he's claiming by Anheuser-Busch or their third-party marketing firm, which is where they're trying to run from, by giving this Dylan Mulvaney a can of celebrating trans year or year of girlhood or whatever it was, that has so enraged the radical right that they were actually violating the laws of advertising towards individuals under the legal drinking age. So they're going after kids. So the argument is by having this Dylan Mulvaney promote Bud Light as, hey, this is what I drink, that of the majority of her followers on social media are under the age of 18. Therefore, they are advertising toward young kids. I mean, this is a real reach and one everyone should kind of be a little concerned about. Because, you know, I don't know how many people under 18 follow my social media accounts. I know there are some. So do I have to then worry that Ted Cruz is going to come after me because somebody might be following me that I don't know and that I don't know. This is weird, weird stuff. Now, he knows it's not going anywhere. This goes nowhere, anywhere. What this is this the outrage machine. This is to tell that guy who's got his mouth open on the can watching YouTube going, doing my research. This is to get him going, yeah, they're going after the kids. We got to defend the kids. So now we've got this next step. It's all this is about. It's about getting those people all bunched up in the panties, all riled up, all angry. It's going nowhere. But it serves the purpose. And the purpose is keeping us pitted against each other, keeping us outraged and not talking to each other. Do I want beer promoted to children? No. Is that what this is? No. Was it a stupid stunt? I don't know. Probably. This is why I keep going. I don't know why corporate America feels the need to get involved in anything other than, hey, we serve a product. That's all we're here for. Keep the CEO's mouth shut. I mean, Elon Musk tanking Tesla's stock. You know, it's why are the stockholders going after him? This is one of those things, though. It's about the outrage. It's about the anger. You know, if it were really about something positive, do you think they'd be saying it? Do you think if it was really protecting children, they'd say it? Do you think if it was really helping children, they'd be behind it? No. Look at their budget proposal, their moral document. is saying, yeah, we're gonna literally take food out of the mouths of children. We're going to cut housing assistance, which means that children, more children are going to be hungry and homeless. We're going to cut veterans' spending, so which means it's going to be longer to get a tooth pulled, or it's going to be longer to get a medical appointment. It's going to be longer to get the care that you need. This is their value system. This is what they're showing us. Don't tell me what you believe in. Show me what you believe in. Don't tell me how pious and wonderful you are. Actions, actions. Shove your words. No more thoughts and prayers. Do something. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. We'll take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that black author and Marxist theorist C.L.R. James passed away. James was born in Trinidad, at the time a Caribbean colony that was part of the British Empire. His father was a school teacher. James became a leading intellectual on the subject of black liberation. His most famous work, The Black Jacobins, tells the story of the 1791 Haitian Revolution, when enslaved black Haitians successfully overthrew French colonial rule. James was a frequent contributor to Labor Action, a Marxist journal produced in New York from 1940 to 1958. He wrote about the struggles of black workers. He often penned fiery language. For example, in 1941, James wrote an article imploring black workers not to cross the picket line during a strike against the Ford Motor Company in Detroit. Ford had a reputation of hiring black workers at a time when many employers discriminated in their employment practices. But James warned his readers that the Ford company was no friend to the worker and that the company was attempting to use race to keep its workforce divided. James wrote, quote, "Ford is one of the most dangerous enemies of labor who exist in this country. This enemy of society has been laying a train of race hatred in Detroit and is now about to touch it off. The organized working class movement and the Negroes will have to fight hard and long to check and frustrate and defeat this sinister plot. This will be no easy fight." In other articles, James also used his pen to call out labor unions for not including black workers and to call for the unification of black and white workers in their struggle. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
There's a common political refrain among Texas progressives: thank God for Mississippi. Our own state government, run by corporate lobbyists and right-wing nutballs, is a notorious hellhole for efforts to provide even a little more fairness for the poor, the working class, and the environment. So, Lone Star progressives need some straw to grasp to keep from tumbling into the ditch of total despair. Mississippi has been that straw. No matter how mingy our state officials are, Texans can count on the Magnolia State to be one digit worse. But have mercy! Texans are suddenly in danger of losing our reputational buffer, for Mississippi is close to making a momentous upgrade this election year. An unabashed working-class Democrat with a program of For the People reforms and an anti-plutocrat campaign for governor has already pulled even with a right-wing incumbent. Brandon Presley is the upstart's name, a little-D Democratic populist elected at 23 years old to be mayor of his small hometown where he still lives. He's now in his fourth term as a highly effective, widely popular member of the State Utility Commission. There, he has successfully battled the electric power giants and telecom profiteers on behalf of everyday ratepayers, workers, and the environment. Presley, who actually is an Elvis cousin, is not a pure liberal. He's pro-gun and anti-choice. But this is Mississippi, and while it's essential to strive for the pure light of liberalism, a multiracial majority of workaday Mississippians see Presley as a pure champion of basics they've long been denied, from health care to voting rights. So they're rallying for change. After all, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. This is Jim Hightower saying, the people of Mississippi know they're being kicked by the moneyed powers. And Brandon Presley is saying, let's kick back. To learn more, go to BrandonPresley.com.
to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's infrastructure week. Yeah, I know. We've heard that before. No, this is the kind of infrastructure week where things are getting done. Not just talking about it, not just taking photo ops, not having little parties, not having get-togethers, actual work being done. We can thank the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, getting us started on the right path to getting stuff done. And one of the areas that is in desperate need of investment, especially if you live like I do in a rural community, internet access. That's something we need. And because of Biden's infrastructure law, maybe we're going to start seeing some positive. There is the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program that's being rolled out and bringing, you know, what used to be parts unknown, maybe kicking and screaming into the 21st century. And that's why I've asked Martin Shaliga to come talk with us. Martin is the executive vice president over at CWA Local 4108. He's also the leader of the Broadband Brigade. He is their district leader. Martin, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I'm glad to be here.
So let's talk broadband. You know, where I live, really, really expensive to get decent broadband access, to get decent internet. For me, this is a no-brainer. This should be non-political. This should be something every citizen wants. Good 21st century internet, because this is important stuff. How are we doing?
Good. We're actually in the planning phases, thanks to IIJA and the administration. They took in a lot of our input, and I feel created a bill that goes a long way to address the needs of our communities, which is broadband. We have substandard broadband. I live in a urban area, and I'm coming to you with a hotspot to my cell phone because I can't get reliable, affordable internet in this day and age in the United States of America. So we're excited. There's a lot of money coming on the order of $1.6 billion in Michigan, where I live, and it's slated for areas that don't have internet instead of just going to the posh neighborhoods to upgrade theirs. So,
I think coming out of the pandemic, I think everyone finally realized, this is important stuff. We should be investing heavily into it. There's a lot of things I would have liked to have seen better, a lot of things I would have liked to have done differently, but getting that initial investment of getting us at least into the, you know, late 20th, if not early 21st century, I think a pretty big freaking deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think an internet, you know, used to be thought of as entertainment, but I think what the pandemic showed us is, you know, it's essential for kids' school, for parents to work. Just everyday business, everyday dealings happen online. It's very hard to find a brick and mortar place to go to get something done.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, this is going to be the future, and we're behind the rest of the world. I mean, I know you spend your time doing this. This is your world. How far behind the rest of the industrialized world are we? Because I've got friends in Europe who say they got much better internet speeds at fractions of what I pay for what I've got. How bad are we internationally?
It's true. I mean, as technology advanced as we are, what we're lacking is just the infrastructure, you know, the stuff that goes into the ground up to the home. We're extremely behind. And not only that, the standards that we use to measure our internet to kind of keep up, we're far below European standards. So we tried to keep up just on semantics. But really, as most people will tell you, it's very difficult to find a reliable, affordable internet service.
Now, here's the thing. What the infrastructure bill did that Biden and the Democrats, with a couple of Republicans voting for, did is making some much needed, much overdue, long overdue investments, and broadband being part of this. We've been living off of, you know, I guess, you know, old technology for far too long, and we're behind. So this idea of catching up, is what we're putting forth enough? Are we going to catch up, or are we going to perpetually be behind the rest of the world?
Well, it's definitely a sizable investment, I think on the order of close to $43 billion for the nation. So it's a significant amount of money. It's a amount of money that we're not going to see for a while. So the concern is for our members and our communities, you know, is it going to be done right? Because if we squander this away as we have in the past, then it's not. If we do this properly with a highly skilled workforce, using local workers and you know, and creating quality infrastructure in our communities, then it's enough. If it's done properly, then it's going to be a very significant investment in our communities and our workforce.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where we desperately need it. And my problem is for far too long, we talked about Infrastructure Week. There were a couple of years during a former administration where every week was Infrastructure Week. We had tons of photo ops and tons of interesting little displays, but no actual work. And, you know, for decades, I've been calling for infrastructural improvements. We're finally getting stuff done. And it sounds like a big number. But if you look at all the years that we neglected things, yesterday, the NTSB came out with a report saying, you know, 10,000 bridges across the country are potentially going to collapse. Work needs to be done. Do we have the workers to do it, though? That becomes the other part of this. Because, you know, we went through a couple of generations of, hey, you got to go to college, got to get a degree, I got to push paper around. Not against people going to college, think it's great. But we de-emphasize the kind of people who go out and build stuff, fix stuff. Do we have enough workers?
I think there's definitely an issue there. I think there's enough potential workers, but what's happened over the last few years is a lot of employers have shed their highly skilled workforce as a means to, you know, prop share prices or make shareholders happy, and they're trying to rely on, you know, fly-by-night contractors, out-of-town workers, then, you know, simply they can get away with paying them less. But what we've seen is substandard work because, you know, it's just when you lay off a workforce like the major telecom companies have been doing, they're laying off their highly skilled workers. You're left to fill that vacuum with whoever will come in the door. So that's our fear. Our fear is that, you know, the public dollars are going to be spent on this project, but it's going to be squandered away on lackluster, you know, work. So we're actively engaging our legislators and our broadband offices to ensure there's strong language, stronger than the base NTIA language, that says, hey, use a local workforce, use a highly skilled workforce, a safe workforce, and use employers that abide by safety standards and OSHA laws and labor laws. That way we can ensure that this is done properly.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing you want are some fly-by-night transient contractor to come through and do shoddy work that's going to leave you with garbage that is unusable, which sadly we see in a lot of states that, you know, across building projects that do away with prevailing wage laws, which is why having a floor saying, you know, these are the wages, these are the conditions, these are the standards, why that stuff's so important.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I don't want to beat up on the workers. You know, people need to work, and they'll work hard. But when you have these contractors that'll pocket 90% of the grant that they were given, and then spend the last few dollars to pay substandard wages and substandard conditions, and use substandard materials, we're going to be left with a very wealthy owner and a very, very poor network.
No, look, I'm not beating up on people who work for a living. I believe everyone needs a job. I'm talking about the people who. Look, you put me out there building our broadband network, you're going to get really shoddy work because I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And I'll be the first to tell you that. But if I need a job, I need a job. This is where training is so important. And this is where, you know, having programs that take workers and give them the skills so that they're able to go out and do a quality job and earn a quality living. For me, this is a potential for us to build that middle class back up again that my grandparents fought for. The idea that if you work hard, play by the rules, you get ahead. This is that kind of stuff for me.
Yeah, I mean, you can compare it to manufacturing. Like, this is something we're going to do in-house in this country. So let's use our local workforce in those neighborhoods. They're going to be using that network in their neighborhoods. They're going to want to build it properly and, you know, ensure there's quality and safety standards out there. So yeah, I agree totally. This is a huge opportunity, and not only to build the network, but to create the next generation of good paying jobs with pensions and health benefits and living wages. So yeah, we're excited. It's a sizable investment, and we're hoping to hold our legislators accountable to make sure it's done right.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Martin Shaliga. He's the Executive Vice President over at CWA Local 4108. He's also Broadband Brigade District Leader. If you want to check out their website, buildbroadbandbetter.org is the website, buildbroadbandbetter.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that and get updates. There's a place to sign up and get some updates and have your voice voice heard on this, because again, this is an important thing. So in talking about these jobs and workers coming into this and maybe getting a new wave of workers coming in, is there an apprenticeship program? Is there a training kind of program? I know my building trades friends, they've got very, very long standing quality apprenticeship programs. If someone wanted to get into help building our broadband capacity, is there a way forward?
Yes, CWA is actively working with not only the federal government, but a lot of educational institutions and other organizations to build an apprenticeship program. Traditionally, apprenticeships have been reserved for the skilled trades such as, you know, electrical journeymen and pipe trades and iron workers. We haven't really had like a communications apprenticeship in the past because it's a relatively new technology, right? You know, the internet's been around in the DSL form and cable just since the late 90s. So CWA, I think, is at the forefront of making sure that we have a curriculum that other institutions can adopt that really creates highly skilled communications qualified technicians to handle this kind of project.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I know some of my CWA friends who are climbing poles or digging line in and doing all that. That's pretty skilled work. Sounds like something we need someone to know what they're doing over.
Yeah, I mean, when you have this much amount of money up for grabs through the grant process, you're gonna see pavers and septic field installers say, "Hey, we'll install broadband. You know, we'll be the cheapest bid." So you know, you got to ask yourself, is that what we want? You know, we have telecom workers that have been doing this kind of work for 100 years, and to leave them out of this project, which just doesn't seem to me like, you know, it would be a good idea.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you get what you pay for. You pay for crummy work, that's what you get. Now, you mentioned earlier about, you know, broadband, you know, being like a utility. I think it is a utility at this point. I think it's almost as important as having electric or running water. If you're going to compete in the 21st century, if your children are going to have a chance at education, if, you know, you name it, if you want to watch television at some point in the very near future, you're going to have a good internet connection. Rich, poor, everywhere in between, it's going to have to be for everyone. So for me, this is where I think we've fallen down a little bit, that we're not looking at this as a utility, and that we are handing some of this, all of this, over to private interests and not claiming enough of it for the public square. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. You know, I think initially it was entertainment, but then I think around the country, the economy and business and education and work, they all went to the online environment, but what was left behind was the network. You know, the network was neglected. And so when it plays that important role in our society, then yeah, there needs to be oversight and accountability to make sure that public taxpayer dollars, you know, do what they were meant to do, is to ensure everyone has equal access to affordable, reliable internet. I compare it to like rural electrification. You know, this is what government does, and to ensure that everybody has access to something that everybody needs.
So you say this program is rolling out. Have we done much in the way of getting things dug into the ground, or, you know, flying on the strings? Have we got much moving forward? I know your state of Michigan, you talked about being from Michigan. I was just looking over at the Michigan civil engineers have given your state a C- on broadband access. So you got a ways to go up. I guess it's a step up from the D plus that you got in 2018. So progress.
So the BEAD is in the planning stages, right? It's a federal timeline. All states that are participating, we're kind of all in this together, although the plans are going to be different, obviously, based on everyone's state's different. States are submitting their proposals for the initial planning funds. They're going to receive it in increments once the federal government looks at their plans. And the great thing is that this bill actually mandates that stakeholders such as labor unions have a say in how they should be done. And not only a say, those planning commissions and broadband offices have to explain why or why not they didn't adopt, you know, our recommendations, as well as other stakeholders. So we're in the planning stages. I believe the first grants will be distributed in 2024. So then we should start seeing some shovels hitting dirt.
That's what I want to see. I want to see better internet. Last question I've got, you know, and I don't know if you know this because I don't either. You know, any chance this gets derailed by the debt ceiling debacle that's going on right now. I mean, it's money that's been allocated. We're going to spend this money into the future. And I know my Republican friends are saying, no, we've got to stop all of this unnecessary spending. Any chance this gets derailed and we don't get the investment we need?
It's Washington, D.C. So at this point, I don't.
I hear you.
I think anything can happen. And it would be horrible for to hold a project this important up for a short-term political gain, you know, playing stunt with federal money for the whole nation when we're trying to do this partisan or nonpartisan project to get broadband to homes.
I mean, this is too important of an investment to have it derailed by petty politics. But Martin, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your thoughts. As this continues, as we start rebuilding stuff, I'd love to have you come back again and share what's going on.
Sure. I'd love to update you in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Martin Shalega. He is the executive vice president over at CWA Local 4108, leader of the Broadband Brigade. If you want to check out their website, buildbroadbandbetter.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1920. That year, a national coal strike had won unionized miners a 27% pay raise. But the miners in West Virginia were not in the union. The United Mine Workers decided to launch an intensive campaign to organize this important coal mining region. It took courage to join the union. If the coal operators found out, you would be fired and thrown out of company housing. And so, today in labor history, detectives from the infamous Baldwin Felts Company came to Matawan to evict miners who worked for the Stone Mountain Coal Company. Local police chief Sid Hatfield supported the workers. He showed up where the detectives were eating dinner with a warrant for the detectives' arrest. The detectives quickly produced their own warrant for Sid Hatfield's arrest. The two sides stood in the street in a standoff. Then, suddenly, a shot rang out. Miners dueled with the coal operators' hired guns. When the smoke cleared, 7 detectives and 2 miners were killed. Among the dead was Albert Feltz, one of the detectives who had earlier participated in the Ludlow Massacre in Colorado. Sid Hatfield survived the gun battle and became a national folk hero. The next year, he was assassinated for his role in Matawan. 10,000 angry miners took up arms in what has been called the largest insurrection since the Civil War. The fighting culminated in the Battle of Blair Mountain, where an estimated 1 million rounds were fired between the miners and the company's hired guns before the U.S. Army intervened and ended the battle. In 1987, John Sayles directed an acclaimed film based on the events in West Virginia. Matawan became a classic, must-see film about the labor movement. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I've recently been on this AI kick. This whole technology thing. It's been something I've been talking about for years, but more recently this AI thing has been front and center in what we've been talking about here on the show. And I saw this story today that, again, it seems futuristic. It seems like one of these things that I thought about, you know, reading, you know, science fiction, you know, novels and Omni magazine back in the 70s and 80s. That, you know, at some point, a computer, as you're walking by, can read your mind. And, you know, the thing that I remember, I think it was Demolition Man, that sticks in my head, where as you're walking down the street, all of the billboards and all of the signs are tailored toward you. It's one of those things where we already have the capability of doing that with an RFID chip or with some kind of code reader. But that's been, you know, something that's been, you know, implanted or it's something that you're wearing or carrying that, you know, can do that. Imagine now taking that kind of technology to be able to basically read your mind and make that, you know, make that possible. Well, evidently, you know, and I was just reading this story that, you know, researchers at the University of Texas, Austin, have taken this just giant leap to doing just that. They evidently have come up with a way for, you know, and it's called an fMRI. By taking these fMRI scans, they can translate what you're thinking into a measurable, readable statement. So that's basically mind reading. I mean, never mind you have the right to remain silent. Oh, please, please remain silent and let us just read your mind with this fMRI scan. This is kind of, this is frightening. Evidently, it measures the blood flow in different regions of the brain. It does, you know, a whole bunch of stuff neuroscientists understand that I don't. But the fact that the capacity of this thing to read your mind, I mean, think about this for a minute. Think about how bad, and imagine them putting this in app form. Because eventually you know where this goes. You know, you're at a dinner party and you're having a conversation and you just happen to point your phone over the person across and you get inside their head of them thinking horrible things about you. Or, you know, maybe something else, which could, I guess, be interesting as well. But this is freaky times. And, you know, some people might be excited about this kind of technology and go, oh, this is a brave new world. This is wonderful. I'm not so sure. I'm not so certain. Now, what they also say is researchers have also developed a way of language decoding was the word that they used for people who have lost the ability to speak. They, I guess, have the ability for, you know, so technologically to help people who can't speak, who have been paralyzed in one way or another, to be able to write. By, you know, by it coming out. And again, technology way above my pay grade. But the fact that it's possible should be kind of worrisome. Now, I know some people are saying, and I've had a bunch of people reach out to me saying, oh, Rick, I think you're overblowing this. You know, this technology's crap. You know, they're just trying to sell us on it. And you know, I'm hoping that's right. But this is where my mind goes. I prepare for the worst, and then whatever less happens, I'm happy. This is one of those things, maybe we should be preparing for the worst. Maybe, as that CEO of the AI company said, hey, regulate us, maybe we should start doing this. Because can you imagine at some point? And I wonder how our Supreme Court would handle this. Because we've already got the ability to do lie detector tests. Imagine just walking into a room and being lie detector tested by this fMRI scan without your knowledge. Or just being scanned in public. I mean, the possibilities are scary and endless. You know, just one of those things. That really, really has me freaked out. Finally today, and this is where, you know, earlier I talked about Minnesota, and good on you, Minnesota, for moving on a bunch of worker-friendly legislation, paid sick days, letting teachers negotiate for class size, you know, letting, you know, nursing home workers negotiate for wages and benefits, you know, the safe working conditions stuff, the quotas and the productivity stuff that's in this law. And we're gonna work on getting some legislators from Minnesota next week to talk about this, because this is big. This could be really great. But Washington State, and Jay Inslee, who I love and was my second choice for president in 2020. Bernie was my first choice. But Jay Inslee was my second because I really like this guy. Evidently now, Washington State is going to be the first state in the country to ensure that Lyft and Uber drivers, that they get paid family and medical leave. That they get help. And, you know, it's the idea of raising the bar for these workers. And I know I've had people say, well, you're against independent contractors. I'm against what I know is coming. I want workers to build power. I want all of these drivers to have the power to say, we demand better wages, hours, conditions. And in talking about the economic pie, I'm on the side of the working people to get more of that pie, to be able to put more in their pocket, to put more on their table, to keep a roof over their kids. That's where I'm always at. Now, we can discuss whether the AB5 and the ABC test is the right way to go. Always going to be on the side of the workers, which is why I'm thrilled that Inslee and the folks in Washington moved on this. It's good stuff. It's moving us in a positive direction for working people. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said got under your nerves, under your skin. I want to hear it. Also, if you miss any portion of the program or any program, thericksmithshow.com. That's where you go to get our podcast. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You are listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always.